Hi, everybody. Wow. So there's like 65 people here. Things are really bigger in Texas. I'm here in New York City. I'm Robin. I'm a compulsive overeater. Just so I don't feel alone, is there anyone else here that's also a compulsive overeater? Please raise your hand. So we're in very good company. And I just want to say the only requirement to be here and for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively or to stop compulsive food behaviors one day at a time. So no matter what, we're all here right now. Whatever happened on the way over to the meeting, whatever happened last night or this morning, this is a new moment in time, right here, right now. So my name is Robin, and I always like to say the most important thing first, and that is, for me, abstinence is the most important thing for me in this 24 hours without exception, because I'm a low bottom case, okay? And I know for myself, I can have the food or I can have life, but I can't seem to have both. So when I say abstinence, what I'm really speaking about is not just a physical food plan, but abstinence is that state of neutrality that they talk about in the big book. It's that state of grace. Neither cocky nor afraid. The abstinence is physical, emotional, spiritual, on all planes and all dimensions. And it really is a spiritual state of consciousness. And if you guys don't have any willpower, I certainly don't. We have something much better than willpower here. And it's the divine, it's divine love. It's higher power as you define higher power that can and will do for the individual and is doing for me today what I cannot do for myself. And for this, I am so very grateful. So I joined OA in 1979. I was like 22 years old and I got abstinent. I just want to give you the facts first so you understand the perspective and where I come from. I got abstinent. It was April 21st, 1980, through the utter grace of God. At 7 o'clock p.m., I dragged myself to a meeting in Santa Barbara, California. I've lost 35 pounds, but I was a dancer. I've always been a dancer and an artist, and there were 35 pounds which simply would not budge, even though I was dancing hours a day and at the gym for like 5 hours a day. So it was a lot of self-will that it was only 35 pounds one day at a time. If anyone came here tonight to lose weight or to get thin, it's a fine reason to come here and to be here, because certainly that's why I came to OA, because I was fine. I just couldn't stop eating. I was always fine. I had a very solid investment in the image that I wanted to project of myself. And if you ask me how I was always fine. Why did I eat? I ate to overcome a compulsion beyond my will. It's the phenomenon of craving that they talk about in the big book. I am the description of the alcoholic that they also talk about in the big book, or the addict. I come from the land of more. Nothing is enough. Nothing's ever been enough. I was really an egomaniac with very low self-esteem. And when I came here to OA, I actually really hated myself. To backtrack, so this God thing, I have a sponsor in California who's been sober and abstinent for decade upon decade. He's an atheist, and this program works for him. Make your own translations for yourself. I thought I knew a lot about spirituality and a lot about God when it came to OA, and I literally had to throw everything that I thought I knew right out the window in favor of making OA and the 12 steps my higher power, because clearly you guys had a solution. I did not. And I also did not like the feeling I had when you guys, when you OAs would look at me the way only an OA can look at you in the eye. And you would say something like, I can really feel your pain, or I really see your pain. And I just wanted like, get out. I don't want anyone to really know me, you know, because I was so vested in the image that I had of myself and being fine and being okay, that I think that was the heart of the matter, is that I was constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself, certainly with the food, body, food, and weight stuff. But I had this image that I wanted to project to you guys because I wanted and needed love utterly. And so I would tell each person what I thought would support the image that I wanted to project of myself so that I would have your love, so I would have your support. So for me, as it turns out, this hunger, this food, this craving, it's sort of like a misplaced spiritual longing for me. And I know when I was in my eating days at 11 o'clock at night, and I was living in California at the time, I would hear these coyotes in the hills just calling out, this calling out of these coyotes. And 11 o'clock at night was a really hard time for me in terms of compulsive overeating. I would feel this loneliness. But this call of these coyotes, it felt like it was coming from the core of me. It was like there was a God-sized hole right in the middle of me that no food would ever fill. So just to backtrack, I come from a family with a lot of love. I'm the youngest of three children. My father was an alcoholic, but he was someone I was really, one of my most favorite people in the whole world. He was very dear. He never took any of his difficulties out on me or on us kids, but there was a sadness that he carried, and he would drink and he would get very sentimental. By the time he left the planet, he was 12 years sober in AA and had quit smoking and became the very best version of himself he could ever be. And we were always very close, but there was this sadness. And my mom was this ebullient enabler. And she was so full of love and she loved being a mom. But no matter what was going on, and I could be sitting in the back of our car and we would be going out to dinner and my father would be drunk and I'd be sitting in the back seat of the car. The car would be swerving and my mom would turn around and she would say, "Don't we look great? Wow, you look so beautiful." Meanwhile, my stomach was in knots and I couldn't identify situations that weren't okay. I couldn't identify discomfort or anger or any negative emotion. For some reason, I short-circuited that. So that was really interesting. But anyway, I've always been a dancer and an artist and a creator. I've always loved love. I've always loved creating. We always moved like every year and a half because my dad was always going for that next job. And, you know, that's how people raise their kids back then. It was like, oh, better job. Let's move the family. So I was always a new kid in class, always felt awkward. I had a lot of love. My grandmother lived with us, a lot of nurturing, but I felt isolated just when I would make friends who'd move. All that changed when we moved to California in 1970. And I was in high school. I had 25 like artist friends. We would do stuff together and it was all like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I had so much fun growing up, right? I don't regret any of it. It was just such a blast. But I had nothing was enough. I come from the land of more. So everything was really excessive. And for me, it was uncomfortable to sit for a moment without pleasure or enjoyment or a drug or something. When all those recreational drugs sort of played out, at about age 17, I started to compulsively overeat, again, to attempt to fill this God-sized hole, this God-sized longing. All the while I was creating, all the while I was getting good grades, I had friends. It was very much an inside job. And I also did things along the way, behaviors, things that I felt really ashamed about, not proud of. And I felt like I was a bad person because I didn't understand that I am not my behaviors. And as a dancer, to be a compulsive overeater is really, really painful. And so I would dance and then I would starve during the day. I'd have a couple hard-boiled eggs and a tab, and then I'd binge at night. Or later on, I was able to get diet pills from a Hollywood doctor. And then I'd go to contemporary dance class and try to flow with the movement. But when you're on amphetamines, you really can't flow. And, you know, I started to pack the weight on and it was exhausting. And I kept thinking, if I just stand up tall enough, they won't notice, you know. It was like so much to maintain that. And it just got worse and worse. So for about 7 years, I snuck around, I lied, I hid, I ate, I binged, I showed up. It was all or nothing. I was showing up to classes and jobs and relationships 200% and then in bed for a week and eating, right? I never got the blueprint on how to live. I just didn't. So anyway, things got worse. I tried every diet. You know, I did what we all did. I used laxatives. I couldn't be bulimic. I just wasn't good at that. I wanted to be, but I just couldn't. And it just, the pain just became greater and greater, and the unmanageability greater and greater and greater and greater for 7 years. Meanwhile, starting at age 13, there was a parallel spiritual search. Reading spiritual books, I remember reading a Ram Dass book when I was 13, changed my life. I stayed up all night and read this book. You know, going to Theosophical Society, going to Mount Shasta, going to ashrams, going here, going there. But when push came to shove, when my car broke down, I ate. I did not have the key to a faith that worked yet. And I had some of my worst binges after spiritual seminars. So anyway, all this is getting us to the first step. I can just remember, you know, going out in the car to get food in the middle of the night, it being pouring rain. I was buying all this food associated with the next diet I was trying. It was so painful as a dancer to put on leotards the next day. And I can remember the windshield was covered in rain. I was crying. I had 1 foot in the car, 1 foot out of the car. I couldn't even find a reason to go in the house. It was like I just was bankrupt. And I was 23 years old. And I can remember one time I was on LSD in the basement of a church in Los Angeles in the 70s. And there was an OA meeting in the church. And it was break time. And this guy came up to me and he started talking to me about OA. He said, you know, the food will definitely be the nail in my coffin if I let it. And I just looked at this guy and I said, man, you are crazy. Little did I know, 7 years later, I would be dragging myself to an OA meeting in Santa Barbara on a Thursday night, 7 o'clock at night, because one of my dancer friends got sick. She got the flu and she came back to class. She'd lost all this weight, but she had this clarity and this lightness about her. And I knew something changed. And she had with her the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she told me about OA. So I started going to the rooms, but I hadn't had enough pain yet. I was special. You guys said, get a sponsor. I said, I think I'll do it in my head. You guys said, work the steps. I said, I think I'll just do the steps in my head. You know, I'll just read this big book, but why can't they even write their own book? This is before the OA book, right? So then I just had to have more pain, and I finally dragged myself to a room that 7 o'clock at night.
7:20.
Thank you. And I was in pain, and I said, help. And I said, how do I do this? It sounds great. How do I know 11 o'clock at night when I want to eat that I'm going to pray or pick up the telephone or do any of the things you're suggesting? And they said, sweetheart. And I could tell that they knew my pain and they had a solution. They said, sweetheart, let us love you until you can love yourself. This is what we suggest. Get on your knees and pray for the willingness to go to any length just for tonight to be abstinent. And I said, okay, I can start there. I can pray for the willingness. So sitting in that seat, I took the first step. I did the first most honest thing I'd ever done in my entire life. I admitted I am powerless over food and my life is unmanageable by me. Who would have thought that from that simple admission, sitting in that chair, that this life would have grown up around me? You guys have grown me up. And it is literally abstinence. It's like, what time did you get up? Oh, you got up earlier than me? Oh, you have more time than me. It's all about this, literally this one day, this one moment. Abstinence is right here, right now in this moment. Step two, came to believe a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. There was no problem with me understanding that my behaviors were absolutely insane. Whether or not I believed that a higher power could or would do that for me, I didn't know. This is all just a big experiment, okay? And it still is. I'm living this big experiment. Step two, okay. So I was told, read how it works. There is a solution from the big book and steps one, two, and three in the step book. Step one, I took that night. I kept reading steps one, two, and three, and they became my mantra. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God as we understood God. And I was reading those steps, and I was sitting in a chair out in the sun in Santa Barbara, and I said, okay, I'm going to take these steps fully, not in my head, but in my heart and in my gut. And I read those steps, and then I said them out loud to my higher power, which I didn't even know what it was at the time. I took those first three steps, and you know what? I felt lighter. I took those steps in my head and in my heart and in my gut with all of my being, because I knew that my life depended on it. And I didn't tell anyone I was going to OA because I needed a place that I could quietly save my own life without a big announcement like going on a diet. And I took those steps. And you know what? I take those steps on a daily basis. They are a renewable contract, even though I took them back then. I think for me, the greatest game changer was getting a sponsor in this program. How do you find a sponsor? I asked. They said, look, choose someone who has the very qualities that you want for yourself. So I looked around the room and there was a young woman. She was kind of willowy. She was kind of lean, and I wanted to be thin. And that's a fine thing to want. But she also had a flower behind her hair, her left ear, and she was very serene and she knew the steps. I asked her to sponsor me and she said yes. She said, call me at 7 in the morning, tomorrow morning. I'm like, 7 in the morning? Okay. I had to be willing to go to any length because I was killing myself with the food. This is revolutionary. This is revolutionary that these guys wrote a big book. It's like this book is a blueprint how to live. It's like a hands coming out of the sky for any human being that's caught in a rat trap, no matter what that is. It's a blueprint or a way to get free. And she got me started. She had me get a notebook. She helped me to develop a food plan. You know, she told me about the tools of the program, which bought me time to work the steps of the program. Abstinence, she helped me develop a plan of eating, which became my abstinence. She became my sponsor. She suggested that I go to as many meetings as possible and that I write down my food in the morning. And then I was so afraid if I had three meals a day, I'd be the size of a house. She said, have the meals that you say you're gonna have. Pray for the willingness to do so. And then if the feelings come up, just write. You know, a couple of years ago, I threw away about 200 notebooks from my closet. And I have many, many more now. The writing has saved me so much so. The phone calls. Get three phone numbers at every meeting that you go to and pray for the willingness to call them. The literature. My go-tos are the literature of AA, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the big book. And that's what I was raised on. Prayer and meditation. Praying for the willingness to go to any length on my knees, in my being. This is the things I'm telling you now that I was told to do then. These still are my practice one day at a time today. It's not like I did them now. These are all the things that I did them then. These are all the things I continue to do. This is my program and my practice. In 1980, you know, I read the 11th step, and in 1980, I said, what would happen if I set aside 30 minutes a day to contemplate? You can call it meditation. I call it contemplate. No matter what, for 30 minutes a day, what would happen if I am still living and breathing that experiment? Prayer is a continuous conversation with higher power and also a listening to higher power. It's something I do today. I still have a sponsor today. I call her a day at a time. She's the sponsor who agreed to sponsor me in 1983 when I moved to New York, and she still wants to hear from me a day at a time. I find one of the greatest prayers is help. Help, even if you don't know or believe who or what you're praying to. This thing works. The age of miracles, as they talk about in the big book, is alive and with us. So step four, you know, it's very clear. And I was told, you know, pray for the willingness to work these steps. Yes, the tools will buy you time to work the steps, but the freedom is in the steps. And what I mean by that If you've ever heard the term burning karma, it's sort of like starting over fresh with a clean slate. The steps are an opportunity to literally burn karma. And if I could say the number one gift of this program, it is the steps enabled me to burn karma, to start with a clean slate, which for me created the sense of worthiness to receive life-changing love from the power greater than myself. And it gave me the privilege of being an instrument of that divine love a day at a time in my life over the long arc. And I'm talking today. So step four, I was told I needed to do if I didn't want to go back. I am not an OA academic. I am not perfect in any sense of the word, but I knew I had to move forward to not go back to the worst pain and hell of compulsive overeating I'd ever known. And so my sponsor was leaving for Europe in a month. I sat down in, and the big book was my guide and my blueprint. I sat down in an afternoon, probably an afternoon or two, and wrote my four-step inventory. I did not have time to become afraid of it, to become a perfectionist about it, to become an academic regarding it. I knew I had to get out and get down to the causes and conditions to save my life. I wrote the four-step, and I made an appointment with the beautiful girl with the flower behind her hair to hear my fifth step. I was very nervous. And I can remember sitting in her driveway in Santa Barbara with the swaying palm trees and the beautiful birds in the full light of day and telling someone all those things that I held and no one heard my whole story, and tell her the whole story of the causes, the conditions, the fears, the angers, the resentments, the shames, the very things that caused me to compulsively overeat. And she listened. And she listened, she listened. And when we were finished, we took the sixth step, the seventh step, and the eighth step right then and there. And when I walked away from our meeting, and she suggested that quiet time that I write the eighth step when I got home, write it out on paper, so I admitted to her, I admitted to God, to myself and another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. Sixth step we took right then and there, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And I did that in a very general way. And I had to do that along the way as each particular defect of character caused me so much pain as I was working the steps, because this is a process, right? It's not like one and done. It's a living, breathing process. And step seven humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Yes, we did that in the driveway. I walked home. I set aside a time of prayer and meditation, contemplation, and made a list of all persons I'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And all these things were a process, okay? So when I say, step six, entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character in living my life, it truly wasn't until my fear became paralyzing or my anger became overwhelming. It was like one little thing at a time. And believe me, I had meetings with you guys who were much further along than me. And I'd say to you guys, I'd say, I think that I'm actually, even though I'm abstinent today, I think I'm actually too emotionally sick to recover. They're like, we believe in you. Just keep going. Just don't pick up if your ass falls off. And I want to say another thing about sitting with discomfort. OA showed me how to sit with discomfort. Before OA, I never felt like I was afraid. I never felt anxiety before. But once I put the food down, the feelings became very clear, and the discomfort, you know, that food is a liar and a bastard, and it will say, it's just the negative voice, it'll say, you've got to eat because you're going to explode. That's a lie. You know, if I'm able They say, pray for the willingness to go to any length. If I'm able to sit with the discomfort, the comfort always comes. And it's that discomfort is like a little grain of sand in the body of an oyster. And it sits with it, it sits with it, it sits with it. And you know what? A pearl is formed around that little grain. And each day of abstinence, a pearl is formed for each of us sitting with that discomfort. And just when you think you're going to explode, hey, look, it passes. So it's been a process, and the humility, the keeping it green. I've got nothing made. It's all I can talk right now, go in the kitchen, have a crazy dinner. You know, it's a day at a time. It's a moment at a time. Keeping it green is so important. All of these steps are a living, breathing, renewable contract. Okay, step 9 took me a year and a half to come to a place where I could make full and complete amends. And to have a concrete program of action, a spiritual program of action that I can actually do something about, those things, those behaviors that I felt so ashamed about, it's incredible. I really felt it was actually after giving my fifth step, I felt like I could look the world in the eye. I could look anyone in the eye and be real and tell them my whole story. But these steps are written in order. It's like I couldn't do step 2 if I hadn't done step 1. I couldn't do step 3 if I hadn't done 2. They all come in this beautiful order. And OA taught me, more important than the image I thought I had to project of myself, I am more important than any image. And I am not my behaviors. I thought I was a bad person and I hated myself because I thought I was those behaviors. And OA taught me, you are not your behaviors. Those behaviors were just the behaviors of someone who didn't know another way. The compassion that comes in, the self-compassion that comes in, the love that comes in, it has made me able to have compassion and love for others in a much huger way. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. My sponsor came to stay at our house. We're exhausted. We're going to bed. My husband and I, we're all going to bed. She pulls out her notebook. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm writing my 10th step. I'm like, oh, you got to write it? You got to actually write it? She's like, yeah. So my 10th step, sometimes it's just a note to my higher power. But was I selfish? Was I resentful? Was I dishonest? Was I afraid? Do I owe an amends to someone? What could I have done a little bit better? What do I do today? What are my credits? What do I feel really good about? What am I grateful for? So that's the format of the 10th step. And the truth of the matter is, I become so sensitive to my own energy that I can't tolerate anything less than love one moment at a time in my attitude. Then on, like, it's really clear, like, my tolerance for self-dishonesty, I just can't handle it. I'm not in OA goody-goody, okay? I'm not. And I'm not a perfectionist. It's just that I can't tolerate dishonesty today. I can't tolerate patterns of negative thinking today. If I feel angry or upset, I need to write about it. I need to, and inventories are something I go back to continuously as issues come up, continuously going back and working these steps. And they become such a part of me that it's like they become part of my atoms, part of my cells. It's like, literally, yeah, the program is alive within me. So sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Yes, I'm continuing to do that a day at a time, contemplating each day, setting aside specific amounts of time for contemplation. You know, I wake up, I write my dreams down, I write my food down, I read the AA and OA literature. I read spiritual literature. I earned the privilege to actually have a spiritual path because I tried so many things that I had to throw out the window. But along the way, I found a spiritual path that has really helped me. And it's a privilege. I call my sponsor each day. I sponsor others. A life of sane and happy usefulness. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? It's a life of love. It's a huge life of love and joy. And there are no graduations. And that's the fun of it. I've come to really embrace the process of it. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Yes. And this is just working the steps is just the waking up. It's just the awakening. And I'm still awakening and awakening more. And we become like the message. We become the instrument of love along the way. And I felt so selfish. I felt like I was a selfish person. And it's so funny, all the changes that have come to pass. I want to just share with you some of the things that I've gotten through abstinently, because I really want you to know, okay? In my first 3 months of abstinence, I worked steps 1 through 8, okay? I got married. I didn't, you know, I'm not really following the rules of the program, if you think about it. I got married in Las Vegas. I eloped to Las Vegas. I graduated college and moved 3,000 miles away from my family to live in New York City to be an artist and a dancer. This is all in the first 3 months of being abstinent, okay? And I married this man who was the man of my dreams. And I had 25 years. And my husband had an abstinent wife who felt good about themselves. So I felt free to be present and happy and joyous and free. And when I wasn't, to process that out, okay? To be a real partner. And we spent 25 years living this life of love and creativity and joy. And I never wanted kids. And then all of a sudden I wanted kids. This is all because, oh wait, these are the gifts of the program, okay? This is unfathomable. And then we both wanted kids. And then I was abstinent twice, pregnant. I mean, I was pregnant twice abstinently and felt great and had humor. But then I also, one of my pregnancies, I had to be in bed for 5 months, abstinently a day at a time, while raising a toddler, abstinently a day at a time. There was nothing between me and the love of my kids and the love with my husband, and to be present and to love so much and to be, I've lost myself in love in the best way possible.
740.
In the sense that there's nothing between me and my actual experience of living life. And I am so grateful for this, because no matter what I said to my daughters, they always looked at how I treated myself. And because of you guys, because of OA, because of my higher power, I treated myself well each day on my knees, praying for the willingness to go to any length, working my program, calling my sponsor. And I'm someone. It's all about if something brings you greater sanity or greater insanity. For me, I still weigh and measure when I'm at home. I don't when I'm out, you know. But it's just like a little practice, because I always feel like anything that I can do to remind myself I have a program is good for me. Now, that might be totally crazy for you guys. It's such a highly individual program, how we work it, and that's the beauty of having a sponsor and a higher power. It must be tailor-made to suit the needs of our life, for real. So, but anyway, they were able to watch me. Okay, mommy's got to go contemplate now. Even when they were infants, I would nurse them, but I would be contemplating. You know, it's just like living this life. And, you know, my parents and I were very, very close. I went through the death of my father, abstinently present. I went through my mother's passing, abstinently present. And I even was with her in the last months of her life, abstinent and present. And it was very, 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 very difficult for many reasons. abstinent, present through the utter grace of a higher power. My husband passed away in 2005, the greatest devastation in the universe. For me, it was my personal 9/11, and had to tell two little girls that their father passed away that afternoon. And he was a mother father. He was a loving, the most nurturing, magical, loving husband and being and father. And I did that surrounded with like a living room full of 20 friends. I have people in my life today. And we told them that, and I didn't have to eat over that. And I went through people trying to sue us for millions of dollars because he was a builder and they were trying to sue for breach of contract. And I went through 10 years of legal battles abstinently through the utter grace of God. And you know what? Abstinence is the only way for me through stuff because it's a direct line to my higher power, to inner guidance, to clarity. I have mentors in my life today. We will know how to handle any situation which used to baffle us. How do I do that? I don't pick up if my ass falls off one moment at a time. I pray, I contemplate, I have mentors I consult with, I write, I read. This program is a blueprint for living. COVID time, my daughters, we're best friends. We're really close, but one moved to LA, once living in Brooklyn with her fiance, who is he's my son to be now. I love this guy so much. Literally, my life is like a love story, a love song, even though there's been so much pain and difficulty, but that is life with the ups and downs. What love story is a love story without that, right? This is all the program that has given me this life. During the COVID time, my beloved dog that my husband gave to me as a gift, she was like our love child, she passed away after 17 years, a little long-haired red dachshund named Gwen. And I treasured her, and she helped me through the loss of my husband. And then she passed away. And my daughters and I were there to help each other through that. And it was so painful, and it was so difficult, but it wasn't a reason to eat. It wasn't, there's always for an addict, there's always an excuse. There's never a reason. Abstinence, that spiritual state of grace, that higher consciousness, which also includes the physical food plan, is the only way through difficult circumstances and through wonderful circumstances. I was alone for the bulk of the COVID time in my home, in my apartment in New York City. I didn't leave my apartment for 3 months, and I was abstinent, and I was painting, and I was dancing, and I was calling my sponsor, and I was there for others, and I was attending spiritual things on Zoom and meetings on Zoom, you know? And I was crying, and I was afraid, but I didn't have to eat over it, and I was lonely, and I think the pain of that loneliness was the greatest pain, but I didn't have to eat over it, you know? It is a miracle. You are all miracles. And hey, you know what? I'm constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself regarding food. And I have no willpower. I can clearly say that if I can be abstinent for 24 hours, anyone can be abstinent for 24 hours because we're all of the same stuff. And if you don't know about this God thing, throw old ideas out the window and just say, wow, AA, OA, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the tools of the program. That can be a higher power. It's great. It's a great, that it's a big, life is a big experiment. And I'm still living the experiment. I don't have it made. It abstinence requires a presence and a vigilance and a continuous conversation with a power greater than myself. I don't hate myself today. I love myself today. And I speak to myself with love today. I have real friends in my life today. They're like part of me. I have some friends in my life. They're like part of me. I miss my husband every day, but he's with me. is with me spiritually speaking, but I miss him so much and it's painful. And the loneliness is great. You know, I've come to embrace whatever is. I have to. I have no choice. It is part of being a human. It's part of being alive. A life of sane and happy usefulness. I never thought that was what I wanted. No way. I was going to change the face of the art world. I was going to do big things, important things, wild things, crazy things. And I actually have done a lot of those things. Let me tell you about some of the wonderful things that have happened abstinently. I got married in Las Vegas wearing high top tennis shoes with a plastic ring from a bubblegum machine to a man that I was crazy about. That was really fantastic. I've created a lot of dance and a lot of art. And I performed and I painted and I've exhibited my art. I've found that one of the greatest joys in life is sitting soul to soul with another human being and just listening to their story and just connecting heart to heart. It's one of the greatest joys. What? I don't know. I just feel like if I could just say life is infused with such a love, I could have never anticipated dragging myself to an OA meeting, 7 o'clock at night. In Santa Barbara, 1980, I could not have anticipated the enormous life of love that would come from that. You know? And I talk to other compulsive overeaters. And I'm here for my daughters. I'm someone that can be counted on. Who would have guessed? And I'm someone that loves to lose themselves in love for their loved ones. There's no greater joy than when my daughters ask me for something. Then if I can, seeing if I can help them create that or do something, even the smallest thing, a life of love and service and joy and being yourself. And that's the other thing. I think in abstinence and working the steps of this program, you become more of who it is you really are. And you're able to do more of what you're really here to do. And that's between you and your higher power and you and your own heart, whatever, however that shakes out, whatever that really is. But this is revolutionary. I love to read the AA Big Book because as I read the AA Big Book, I hear the old timers' voices and their earnestness, their absolute earnestness. And I hear their voices and their stories. And you guys are the living Big Book. We are the living Big Book. It is revolutionary that a human being, no matter what rat trap we are stuck in, whether it's compulsively overeating, compulsively undereating, starving, binging, drugs, sex, gambling, alcohol, whatever it is, that we literally have a blueprint how to get up and out of that. You know, each one of you who's abstinent right here, right now, and we all are. So the Big Book says, okay, so now we're abstinent. Now it's how to stay stopped, one moment at a time, taking the first three steps in my heart and in my gut and praying for the willingness to go to any length. But each one of you are way showers to the guy next to you who can't stop. It's amazing. I was wondering, we have about 5 minutes left, and I would just love to hear the promises in the room tonight. And I haven't qualified for a very, very, very long time, and it really has been a golden opportunity. Certainly, I've never been to a meeting where the qualification was a whole hour long. You know, I've always said, oh, 10 minutes, it's hard to pack. Thank God, 42 years of abstinence a day at a time into, you know, 10 minutes or 20 minutes. And I'm sure when we get off the call, there are going to be so many things that I will wish that I would have shared. But it works. This program works. And if it can work for me, this program works for you. It's one moment long. It is one moment long. So with that, I would just love to read the promises, which are in my big book, page 83 at the bottom, okay?
Please do.
And I just want to encourage you all, because you're worth this. You are worth this. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and will gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And in closing, I'm going to say this. The beauty and the freedom, the true spiritual experience, does not come after 90 days, 1 year, 5 years, 40 years of abstinence. That spiritual experience and that beauty, that flows in the first morning, the first 24 hours of being abstinent. May the blessings be.